Viktor Frankl said, "Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms. To choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's way." This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson. Stay tuned for the next hour as Sue explores the human psyche, what makes us tick, and how to live better, more fulfilled, and more meaningful lives. Only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program. And I'm in the studio with Craig today. I was actually going to be working from home, turned on my computer and noticed that our Wi-Fi was down. So I rushed here, if I could say rushed, up the few flights of stairs to be in the studio. Anyway, here I am. And today I'm going to be talking about hope and resilience. Last week I spoke about a friendship and the gift of friendship. And I received a lot of fantastic feedback. Thank you so much. But some people have also been asking me to please speak about how do we hold on to hope in an ever-darkening world. And I think it's an incredible subject to speak about, because normally, well, I am a logotherapy clinician. Most of my work in my life has been working with people who have had to find hope to survive or in their dying processes. And so I have been blessed with many, many teachers in my life. And today, I thought I would speak about the hostages, because they have come out, the living hostages who have now been freed. All the living hostages in Gaza have been freed now. Unfortunately, we are still waiting for three more deceased hostages to be brought back to Israel. And you can imagine the torment of those families waiting. But I'm not a soothsayer at all. But I choose to not give up a hope for a different future, even though we are in an ever-changing world, a world that is so often filled with despair. And many people around us are speaking negatively and pulling us into their own despair. And negativity drains us all of hope. And hope is not a passive thing. Hope needs to be worked on. And if we work on hope, hope becomes our resilience. And which is what, if you speak to any Holocaust child survivor or the few that are still alive, you will hear from them that it was their hope that did keep them alive. Hope for their families perhaps to still be alive, for someone waiting for them. That's what they held on to. Now, you know, it was, I mentioned last week that it was Remembrance Day on the 11th of the 11th. And I listened to a talk by this Alec Began, and he's a 100-year-old World War II veteran. And he was asked on what life means to him and what the world meant to him. And his answer was very, very sad, because he said he was really asked if the war was worth it. Was it worth it? And he said, no, not when he sees what is happening in Britain today. He says he is totally dismayed at the lack of freedom in Britain. And he answered, what we fought for was our freedom. And what I see is rows and rows of white stones of my friends who died in action and fighting for our country. And he said, freedom in Britain has gone. Freedom of speech, faith is all slipping away. And a lot of veterans feel the same. Now, that was an incredibly sad YouTube to listen to. If you want to listen to him, go on to Alec Began, B-E-G-A-N, and he speaks about it. And, you know, the hostages coming out, I've heard some of their stories live, and I've listened to their experiences in horror, and we'll get back to that shortly.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
This is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program, and I'm talking about hope and resilience. I was mentioning to you about listening to a lot of the hostages, quite a few, should I say, who have been in South Africa, and I've heard their stories and their experiences, and they have been horrific. And sometimes their facial expressions are blank, and you wonder what is going on behind that. And yet each spoke about choosing to speak out, to fight for the freedom of their companions who were still being held in Gaza. This was definitely holding on to hope, and it gave them the resilience to be able to come and speak in a strange country to people they didn't know and speak about their mission to try and get their sisters and brothers who are still in captivity free. They had this mission to fulfill, and many of the messages were about searching for hope, or keeping hope alive in themselves, so that they could be able to speak out. And that's incredibly hard. And I said, you know, that I'd noticed their blank expressions, and those would be with me forever. And every now and again, when they spoke of the brothers or sisters that they had left behind, it was mostly the brothers, because the women were released earlier, some of them. But the pain in their faces and their voices was so, so noticeable. Now, in our own world, we need to look at what we are surrounding ourselves with, because I want to read you this short thing by Khalil Gibran on fear. And he says, "It is said that before entering the sea, a river trembles with fear. She looks back at the path she has traveled from the peaks of the mountains, the long winding road crossing forests and villages. And in front of her, she sees an ocean so vast that to enter there seems nothing more than to disappear forever. But there is no other way. The river cannot go back. Nobody can go back. To go back is impossible in existence. The river needs to take the risk of entering the ocean, because only then will we fear disappear, because that's where the river will know it's not about disappearing into the ocean, but of becoming the ocean." This poem by Khalil Gibran on fear is incredibly powerful, saying that we need to look at our fear. Are we going to remain in the depths of the ocean of feeling that we're drowning? Or are we going to become part of the tide of that ocean and begin to flow a bit more, to begin to flow towards a better future, away from the terrible fear? Fear very definitely stops us in our tracks. I was out for lunch a few weeks ago, and I was a bit early, and my friends had not arrived yet. And I was looking around at different diners at other tables, and I could literally see, and I'm not a soothsayer, let's put it that way, but I could see what each table was talking about. One table was filled with laughter, and you could see they were really all enjoying being together. The other table looked as though they all wanted to escape from each other. It was heavy. Even from the other side of the restaurant, I could see the heaviness that was there. They were all obviously talking about whatever was really bothering them at the time. And I knew quite a few of them at that table. It was not that they were facing huge issues, well, as far as I know. But they were all talking definitely about South Africa and about Israel and the world. And we definitely do live in an ever-changing environment. There are new inventions all the time. Some people thrive and adapt to changes, and others struggle. what this other table was showing me was that they were living in the struggle. And Aristotle said, hope is the dream of a waking man. And that's what we've got to hold on to, the hope for a better future. And when we are with each other, to try not to become a Pollyanna, which I've often mentioned before, but to actually bring a bit of resilience into our own words, our own way of acting. The various hostages that you're going to be listening to two audio clips today, and I'm hoping that you will agree, as I do, that what they have taken on is to try and change all of us and make us see how they found the courage to live within the darkness. Now, on a Facebook post, I saw a little children after liberation, these tiny little children, rolling up their sleeves and showing their numbers tattooed on their arms, remembering that 6 million Jews were killed, and yet the ones that survived had the resilience to forge a new life, many in foreign lands, new languages, new countries, everything was foreign to them. But they brought children into the world. And what I notice now is that in Israel, a lot of the IDF soldiers have also decided to bring children into the world. The resilience of Israel was not born totally in the Holocaust and the genocide of Jews. It was centuries of persecution in the making, of leaving family, friends, and all they knew, packing up a few precious items, memories, and then moving on till the next round of persecution began. Now, I just think that if we look at those little children rolling up their sleeves, smiling, showing their numbers, I have to wonder how many of them decided to go on with their lives and have children of their own. That to me is the question, because it's the most wonderful, wonderful thing. Viktor Frankl said they must not lose hope, but should keep their courage in the certainty that the hopelessness of our struggle did not detract from its dignity and its meaning.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue, and I'm back on the Finding Human program. You're about to listen to an audio clip by Avinatan Or, who was a hostage, held hostage for a long time, and he said, everything can be taken from you, your freedom, your name, your time, your body, but no one can take your mind and your humanity. This is Avinatan Or speaking at the opening session of the JF Federation's General Assembly on how he survived 738 days as a hostage in Gaza. Thank you, Craig.
My name is Avinatan Or. I am 32 years old, one of seven siblings, the second oldest. As you all know, on October 7, I was kidnapped with Noah from the Nova Music Festival. I spent 738 days underground in Gaza in Hamas captivity, alone, chained, without light, and without food. I was one of the last hostages to come home. All of my captivity was in the tunnels, alone. For more than 2 years, I saw no sunlight. Days went by without anyone speaking to me. I didn't hear my own language. No one called my name. The hardest part was not knowing anything. Not what day it was, not what was happening in the world, and not whether the people I loved were still alive. To survive, I create myself rules. Rule number one, patience. Every day I told myself, just one more day, don't think further. Patience was my lifeline. Rule number two, find common ground. I spoke with my captors about faith, about the Torah and the Quran, about Yosef and Yusuf, Abraham and Ibrahim. Different name, but universal stories. It reminds me that humanity can exist even in darkness. Rule number three, Anger destroys you. You cannot survive on anger. I let myself feel it sometimes, but then I let it go. Rule number 4, keep the mind working. My engineering background saved me. I counted steps, I collected data. I built a small light from broken cables. I planned escape routes in my head. I told myself, you will not let others decide your destiny. And I tried to escape. I dug for weeks, through sandbags, through a collapsed tunnel, toward the surface. I made myself work to change my own destiny. One day, as I was digging, I hit the root of a tree. I smelled it. It felt like touching life in the place of death. Then one night, I reached the outside. I saw stars for the first time in years. I wrote hostage on a white sandbag, planning my next step. But they found out. They beat me for days. They tied me to a chair for a week. I was sure I would die there. But even then, I wrote 3 things next to my bed. These too shall pass, patient, and let it be. Those words kept me human. In the tunnels, I had too much time to think about life. I used to believe I had bad luck. How could this happen to me? Now I understand something different. Everything in my life, my childhood, my parents, my education, my army service, working in construction, studying engineering, all of it made me who I am. And who I am is what kept me alive. I don't see myself as a hero. I didn't choose to be a hostage. The heroes are the IDF soldiers, the ones who choose to fight for others, who live with trauma, whose lives are broken. They saved so many lives, and I want to help them. That is my next mission. But I did survive. And because I survived, I carry a responsibility. A responsibility to talk about patience, about humanity, and about complexity. A responsibility to know good from evil, right from wrong, and to have moral clarity. A responsibility to remind us that division destroys us, and that we must find what brings us together, not what rips us apart. A responsibility for unity. We, the Jewish people, survived thousands of years because we stood together. When we are united, we are unbreakable. And when the Jewish people unite around the cause, like bring our hostage home, we are unstoppable. Unity is not a slogan, it's our strength. If I learned one thing in the tunnel, it is it. Everything can be taken from you. Your freedom, your name, your time, your body. But no one can take your mind and your humanity. That is where survival begins. Thank you.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson, and I'm back on the Finding Human program. If you'd like to WhatsApp me, please do so on 061-895-1019. I'm sure you've all got an idea for yourselves about what hope means and what resilience means. That Abinatan Or absolutely amazing of what he said. And, you know, just going back to Viktor Frankl for a moment, Viktor Frankl became just a number. 119104 was his number. He was stripped of everything, and yet he chose to write on anything, little scraps of paper, anything that he could find, he wrote, because he said he wanted to write a testimony to man's resilience. Now, Abinatan Or certainly testifies to resilience. And Frankl said, the last of the human's freedom is to choose one's own way. Now, if I unpack what Abinatan spoke about, what he held on to when there was no sunlight, no one called his name for 738 days, held hostage in Gaza, no one called his name. I found that absolutely heartbreaking. And he spoke about the rules that he set for himself, patience, and how he was planning an escape. What I loved was He kept playing in his mind the thought of freedom again and again, and he started digging towards that freedom. And when he came to this root of a tree, and it meant, what does it mean to him? I mean, I've never thought of a root of a tree like that before. I've thought of a root of a tree holding each other up. The trees in their, the underground often holding each other up. But here he said the root of the tree spoke to him of life. And then he saw stars, and that was the first time in years. But then once again, he was tied up and shackled and put onto a chair and kept there. But he stuck to these, this too shall pass and let it be. And all his past experiences, what he had done, he said he thought, that he had had quite a tough time. But in actual fact, when he looked back on all his experiences, he realized that they had all led to one thing, and that was to keep him alive, to survive. And that's what he's done. And this responsibility of his to speak out takes incredible, incredible courage. There's a story of two patients that I love, because that's his story. Obviously, other hostages have got different stories. But there were two patients in a hospital room for a long time. And there was one who was next to a window. And every day, this patient, I'll call him George. That's our AI man here at the studio, actually. Okay, so let's think. One man was next to the window of this big ward, and the ward was a very stark, empty ward, just these two patients. And he, every day, the patient next to him would say, I don't think I can live another day in such pain and awful hospital conditions. And the man by the window would say, let me tell you what I can see going on outside, and perhaps it will help us get better so we can enjoy the outside. I can see, and every day he saw different things. The one day he would see a children's playground with children laughing and playing and going on swings. And he really would elaborate on what he was saying. And then he would say, another day, he'd say, there's a market in the park outside. Gosh, look at all those different people walking around the market. And then other times he would talk about the trees and the changing colors in the seasons. And he would really describe the trees in great detail. And he would talk about people walking past, riding on bicycles, running. And even when he himself was getting weaker and weaker, he still tried to help his roommate believe that there was something outside that was worth striving for. This, the man by the window, died in his sleep. And the other man asked the nurses in the morning to please put his bed next to the window. He could not wait to see all that his companion had seen, and he thought it would give him hope to survive. He was put next to the wall, the window, and what did he see outside? Simply a blank wall. He could not believe what he was seeing. What had happened was that his companion had decided to make things better for his friend. And, someone who had become his friend, his roommate. And he had made this wonderful, wonderful image of life going on outside. When the man who was put next to the window realized that it was just a blank wall, he also passed away. Why? Because he could not remove himself. He could not step aside from the pain of his existence and see something beyond that pain. And I think that this is what our hostages are showing us. They are showing us that they are able to reach beyond the pain. There was a beautiful picture the other day of the four different hostages who had come out, the men, and they were all going in. They had five of them, actually. They were going in to eat a meal that they had all dreamt of when in captivity. And there they were. It was something so normal to do, to go and eat a meal. How fantastic to have that will to go on living after all that unbelievable pain. And the other thing that had struck me about Avinatan Orr was that there was no hatred in his message. It was more a message of reconciliation almost. And in his resilience and his hope for a better future, I think his hope for a better future allowed him to see beyond what is happening right now. And, you know, we need to surround ourselves with people who help us look at what's going on around us and feel a bit better. And Viktor Frankl said, the more one forgets himself by giving himself to a cause to serve or another person to love, the more human he is. And I do think that most of those who survived reached beyond themselves to another person, to another cause. So many of them were alive wondering what had happened to the people that they had loved. Avinatan Orr's girlfriend, Noa Agamani, was a survivor as well after many, many days and nights. And her absolute mission when she came out of captivity was to free the other hostages. That's what she was doing. She spoke at any venue where they asked her, at major events. She would speak out and ask for them to become back. I think I might have said that Viktor Frankl said pain is only bearable if we know it will end, not if we deny it exists. And every single hostage has shown us, and their families, has actually shown us that they have not for one moment lost that will to believe that this pain will end. And at the same time, they have never denied its existence. And if you've been to Hostage Square, you will see the unbelievable resilience of the people there. And I certainly, in my work, my 18 years at hospice, I saw this on a daily basis. I saw it from my patients. I saw it from their families, from young children. I saw it. And I also saw what happened with our own way of responding. And sometimes I would notice that the nurses did not want to go into different wards. They obviously went in and did what they needed to do, but you could see it was not done with enthusiasm. Whereas other wards, they would go in and I would hear chatting and they would do their work and they would come out with a positive energy. And I realized that this is a responsibility we all have to one another, is not to pull other people down into our despair, into our hopelessness. And if people in hospice care and often at end-of-life care can still keep their spirits up to help other people. It was not to say that when the psychiatrists or their hospice counselors came in that they didn't share their pain and their despair, but they didn't bring other people into it. And it was so vivid in the faces of the nurses. And I also noticed this when I myself was nursing so many, many years ago. What about compassion for others? Now, this is a big one. And Frankl believed that maintaining compassion for others, even in the face of extreme suffering, can save ourselves by helping us hold on to humanity. You're going to listen to another audio clip a bit later, and you will see that there as well they talk about holding on to their humanity by seeing others not as total enemies, but seeing the humanity in everything. You know, Frankl also speaks about the deadly effect of lost hope. And this was something that he definitely noted in the concentration camps. He noted that a sudden loss of hope could have a very deadly effect. And he told the story about one of the prisoners in the camps who had expected to be home for Christmas. He had had a dream, and the dream was that he was celebrating Christmas and he was home with his family. And when Christmas came and went, this particular prisoner lost all hope when he wasn't released.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue on the Finding Human program, and you're about to listen to another audio clip by Elie Sharabi, and who showed unbelievable, unimaginable strength, teaching the younger hostages that he was with for a time to be thankful even in the pitch-black tunnels of Hamas.
I tried to force them every night before we were going to sleep to find something, you know, one thing that good happened to them in the same day. And I knew it's like a muscle that you need to train. It's something that can make you stay optimist about your chances to survive this hell.
Believe me,
it was very difficult for them to find one thing in the beginning, and they look at me like I'm a lunatic. And what I want from them, they didn't understand. But again, they did it, and I think after 2 or 3 weeks, each one of them start to find 4 and 5 things, that good things that happened to him in the same day.
Wow.
And that was amazing. And it's like you create your reality in a place that it's all dark and lots of things, you know, bad things happening to you.
Yeah.
So it was very good session that you can find good things that happened to you. Be sugar in your tea. Once a week or 2 weeks you get a tea. And it was a little bit more rice this time, or it was, a tomato in this rice this time, and not just plain rice. The guy that gave you the food today is not someone that is cruel to you or humiliate you, so it's a good thing. Or someone that usually humiliate you left the tunnel for 2 or 3 days. It's a very good day we have. All these things.
Wow.
You just need to find these things, and it's happening all over you. And, you know, every day good things happen to you.
Wow.
Just need to find it.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson, and on the Finding Human program, the message has come through. Sue, your program today is unbelievable. Thank you. You're such a wise woman and a pleasure to listen to. You're a special lady. Thank you. Thank you for that beautiful message. I really appreciated it. You were listening to Elie Sharabi, and he was a resident of Kibbutz Be'eri when he was abducted on the 7th of October. He was only released in February 2025 as part of the Hamas-Israel agreement. And he had been in captivity for 491 days. He said that he gave himself up at Kibbutz Be'eri because he thought it would save his wife and his daughters, Noah and Yael. Unfortunately, they were murdered. And his brother Yossi was also kidnapped and later murdered after 100 days in captivity. And yet Elie has come out, and he has written a book. He was an educated man, and he's used all of that to actually begin to try and help other people since his release. Upon his arrival, when he got out of the hostage his hostage captivity, he was told that his daughters and his wife had been killed, and it was only upon arrival at the assembly point that his mom and his brother were told that his wife and daughters had been murdered. He lost 30 kilograms, and he's a tall man, and he came back weighing 44 kilograms. He was starved, and yet look at this. He has taken on this, saying he would fight the darkness of the captivity, which is amazing. Viktor Frankl, just going back to Viktor Frankl as a hope and a source of strength, he kept saying that the moment he himself lost that sense of hope, he would know that he was slipping down very quickly. And he said that that the compassion for others had to be there, and the freedom to choose his attitude. And I think this is something we so often forget, that we do have the freedom to choose, certainly not when we're in captivity, but I'm talking about out here in the ever-changing world, which is frightening. Very definitely, we do have the choice to change our attitude. How do we want to face the future? How do we want other people around us to feel that are we pulling them into the pit of despair and anxiety? Or are we showing people that there is a sense of hope that we can hold on to? How? By reaching out to others. And regardless of the situation, it is within our inner strength and our attitude that we do have it. And in Viktor Frankl's book, I'm sure many of you have read it, Man's Search for Meaning, he details the horrors of Auschwitz and the moral corruption of those who worked there. And yet his philosophy was not about wishing away the problems or even pretending that they didn't exist. Rather, just like both the audio clips that you've heard, both those hostages and many others, instead of pretending nothing happened and that they didn't exist, rather they have acknowledged them in the horrors of their reality. And yet, despite recognizing the horrors, or maybe because of it, they describe holding on to hope. And the Seagulls, who were also held in captivity, spoke at the UN, and she was saying that it was very, very difficult to hold on to humanity. They were not allowed to cry, even when they saw younger people being hurt around them. They were not allowed to cry. They had to hold on to tears. And they have come out, and they are both speaking about it. It's Keith and Aviva. I heard them both speaking here. What unbelievable courage. The people, those of us who lose hope in the future and don't look to see that, there is something going on. We are being asked to remain positive in this very, very frightening time. Thank you, Craig.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program, and the time is going by very quickly, as it always does. I was reading an article, it was on South Africa, and it said, "Where is our resilience, our much-praised South African spirit and work ethic?" Well, I think that is quite something we can agree to disagree on sometimes. And he goes on to say, where's our willingness to fight for what we believe in, and as so many before us have done? How can we expect anything to change if we are not willing to do the changing? If we don't change it, guess who gladly will? The corrupt and the criminal, to suit their greedy needs. So how do we begin doing this when all around us is doom and gloom? According to Frankl, the only freedom that camp prisoners had left was the freedom to choose the attitude that they had been given in any situation. Of course, this is ultimately true for all of us. What attitude will I adopt in this situation? In South Africa, this was written in 2017. So what attitude do we adopt in South Africa today in 2025? Are we going to give up, or are we going to retain hope and help others also realize that there is hope in this very confusing word? And hope is not a mean. It doesn't just happen. It is something we have to work on. It's an inner strength. It's in our attitude. And this inner strength is the freedom to choose, how we respond, the internal freedom to choose our attitude and our response. And definitely compassion for each other, and knowing that we are not alone in this world. There's a lot of people making changes, even though we look at it sometimes and we think, what is there? There is hope. And we must believe that we are called at this stage to be the best we can be, the best person we can become. That is what we are being asked for. That is the mean where we can find meaning. We can choose our attitude, and that's one of the greatest teachings, is to choose our attitude. No matter what life throws at us, we still hold the power to shape our response. Thank you so much for listening. I will be in touch with you again, or be on air again next week. I send you much, much comfort in this time of change. And in South Africa, I know that we are all questioning many things, but let's look at what, like that patient looking out the window, seeing a life that was out there that didn't really exist, but in his mind, for the sake of the other patient, he showed what could be and what he believed was. So let's help each other see what is outside our windows, see what is good and what is the best that we can be. Let's show each other compassion and humanity. Thank you so much.